Chinese historian and author Doug Chong can trace his heritage to rice farmers who lived here on Oahu. One of his books, Ancestral Reflections, Hawaii's Early Chinese and Waipahu, details the rice industry from 1885 to 1935. Chong shares a forgotten rich history of rice and its contribution to our island economy. Before corn seed and before sugar was king in Hawaii, there was the reign of rice. Chong is a driving force behind the Hawaii Chinese History Center. His passion drove him back to mainland China to fill in the gaps to the Chinese rice story here in the islands.
We have been in Hawaii for 9 generations, and the local Chinese here in Hawaii have a very unique situation because 70% of the Chinese come from only one small county in China, which is Zhongshan County. And as that, we have the largest Zhongshan population in the world, I would dare say even outside of China, including China, because in China most of the villages have been depleted of our local people who have moved off to better and bigger things in China. But in Hawaii they have stayed, and as such, families trace their history down to 7 to 10 generations already in Hawaii, and we all come from one area. And very little has ever been really researched and written, and so 50 years ago, the Hawaii Chinese History Center started, and we started to encourage our researchers and show them how to research to the point where we could get our writers to write about their family history, their heritage, and what it means to them to being American Chinese growing up in Hawaii and how their ancestors came to the islands. As such, we have put out almost 4 dozen books on the Chinese of Hawaii, written by the Chinese themselves. And we still carry on our heritage and our history, as very few Chinese can track their original history that far back. And when they come to our history center, we can help them and show them how, because Hawaii's Chinese population is so small due to the Chinese Exclusion Act.
Now, I was driving toward the North Shore and happened to stop at Ching's store in Punalu and was delighted to see on their wall the incredible history of rice in Punalu and a video. The society goes back there and cleans the graves every Ching Ming, but not this year.
No, due to COVID, we haven't had the opportunity to do so. But Punalu was only one of the very, very many centers of rice growing. On Oahu, we had Waikiki, Makiki, Palolo, Manoa, Pearl City, Waiau, Waiava, Waipio, Waipahu, Laie, Haula, Punalu, Kahana, Waikani, Kahalu, Kailua, Kaneohe, all of them. All of this area was all in rice planting at the turn of the century. Rice planting began very early in the 1860s. The Chinese left the sugar plantations and started their stint with working with the Hawaiians, capturing their lands. It was a very opportune time because acres of taro land lay fallow as the native population dwindled. And so the Chinese went in there, settled among the Hawaiians, restored their taro and fish ponds, taro lands and fish ponds, and took a lot of the area to drain and clear to grow their rice. Once they started their rice, more and more Chinese laborers came into the islands to help with the rice planting. They went into the areas closer to the sea, so they never affected the sugar plantations, which began much later on, about 30 years later, before the rice sugar plantations really started to take off. They took the upper lands, the drier lands, whereas we took the lower lands and the areas among the streams and the flatlands that had artesian wells.
Now, I know there is an area just off the Pali Highway as you go into Kailua, that Heiau, where the community is restoring the lohi, the taro patches.
That was all in rice. That whole area was in rice. And Kailua, especially because it had the lower land, the one that always floods, and we also had all the valleys. Up here in the valleys, we used all the valleys up in Kailua. It was because we had so much water. We had access to water. And the valleys were very, very prized because of the water. And also, a lot of the land could be terraced, much like it is in China.
You mentioned artesian wells, and I think there's a spring over there in Mo'ili'ili.
That's right.
The popular
artesian wells in Mo'ili'ili, Sheridan Street area. That whole area had artesian wells, and we had them in Waipahu area. And that made it much, much easier, because where you could not or it was more humbug trying to separate the streams and getting the water to the rice and taro fields, the artesian wells would just bubble up and give you free access to the water.
And I'm trying to think of the name of that restaurant there.
Willows.
Willows Restaurant, yes.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So that whole area was also in rice planting. We have many pictures of the whole Makiki Waikiki area showing Diamond Head in rice and showing Punch Bowl area in Makiki. That whole area was in rice.
Now, over in Waipahu, at the plantation village there, I understand that you've started a tradition there of actually planting rice as a part of that history?
Yes. Well, we have it just mainly for our museum. We have a very beautiful Victorian mansion there that we rebuilt there at the Waipahu Cultural Garden Park with our Chinese Society House, which is really called a Chinese temple now, and a very large original cookhouse that's still standing from 1912. And as part of our display, we show how the laborers lived there. There we had, amongst the Victorian houses, we had some bungalows where these single Chinese laborers would live there. They'd work there. There was even a death house there. And for part of the display, we do cultivate rice just to show our visitors what rice looked like, because Waipahu started their rice plantations long before the sugar came in at the turn of the century. And we had that whole area, the lower area, the upper area, the side area, the Waipio area, Hawaii, Waipio, the whole area was in rice. So it was one of the largest, we had one of the largest Chinese communities next to Chinatown itself, because we had rice, we had sugar, and we grew hasu or lotus root and vegetables and poultry, and we restored all the fish ponds. So it was a thriving Chinese community there.
Now, I had the wonderful opportunity of attending a dinner that was hosted by one of the Chinese societies, and on the table was a small bag of rice paying homage to the roots of the members of that society. And I understand that that group is, you know, the one that's responsible for maintaining the grave sites of those bachelor rice farmers from way back when there in Punalu.
Well, yeah, that is the Punalu Institute. We started in 1906 as a Chinese debate society, and we are still in existence today. So that is the party that you attended, and it's a very old society, and the descendants of all the Chinese who live there still operate the organization. Now, that grave site there is not only for bachelors, but it represents all the different families that lived and died among the area, because there are actually four major burial sites in the Punalu area. Collectively, we have designated just one area with two different graves as being the venerated ancestor, although there are other graves and other grave sites there in Punalu that we had. And it was actually designated quite late in history that we designated that area, because the earlier area was on the seashore where the Chinese started to bury, but then the tide started to come in, so they decided to move the area further up in the mountains. And that's the area that we have designated as our ancestral memorial.
And in doing my research, I understand that that land is owned by Kamehameha Schools.
Usually, it's just the one time in April that we go up there for Qingming. But a few weeks before that, we have people help us go up there and clean the grave site area.
Well, I was really impressed, you know, in just, you know, a little afternoon jaunt up there on that side of the island to learn that history, because it's all there on the walls. And you have a wonderful little kind of a loop video that plays talking about the history of the valley.
Right. I did that many years ago, with about 2006, on the centennial of our club. And I put together this video on all the different Chinese people, the Chinese families that settled there. And it's very interesting, because in Punalu, it was highly, I'd say about 95% of all the rice farmers were from only one small district of an 8-mile radius within Zhongshan County itself. And we all spoke only one dialect, which is almost totally extinct. I still speak it, but I can only speak it with the three living people who still speak that dialect. But within that, we had a microcosm because it was just like the village area that we came from, and we all settled together. We all decided to settle together. And all of those families, as their children grew up, they used to match marry, like the Wongs would marry the Lums, or the Lums would marry the Chings, or the Yuans would marry the Lums, and back and forth and back and forth. But they were all one kind of people. They were all the Namlong people from the Zhongshan area. So it was a subculture in another subculture, which defines Hawaii.
And were you able to make the trek back to your village?
When I was much younger, I was very fortunate, you know, the first time I got back there, because a lot of the old people were still there, so I conducted a lot of research. And it was wonderful because China was closed for so long. The stories that I heard as a child of 8 or 9, I used to write them down before Alex Haley even started his route. The stories of my grandmother and her sister who went to the California Gold Rush, you know, they used to sit down and tell me these stories about things happening here and in China. And long after they had died, I finally got back to China the month after Mao Zedong had passed away. And I finally got back to the village, and I found a very old man, and we were just sitting there in the heat and talking stories. And he wasn't too, you know, he wasn't too open to talk. So I swung into our native dialect, and he just smiled up, and he said, "You're from overseas?" I said, "Yeah, I'm staying at my great-grandmother's house." And when I told him about that, he nearly cried. He said, "You know, I know them so well that I was with your grand-uncle when he died." And he started telling me the exact same stories that my grandmother had told me when I was a child. So, you know, it just brought this all back. And I got to sleep in my great-grandmother's house, and all her things, her pictures were on the wall, and all the dishes, things that she had brought back from Punalu were still there in the house. So we still have a very, very strong connection. Many of the books that we've written are based on what we call oral history. And oral history is far more enlightening than written history many times, because it deals with the ordinary and the everyday people and their trials, tribulations of making a life in a new country. And I think that more than ever, what we want people to do is to realize the experiences that they went through, to be thankful, and to retain a lot of their values, their histories, the things that made them unique, that made them Chinese, because after all, it is their identity. And more, rice farming is not easy. It's not easy at all. And where we come from in Zhongshan, we did the same thing. We pushed these crops. We pushed two crops a year. And to push two major crops a year, that was hard work, because it's not only clearing the land and then planting the seeds and then harvesting, and fertilizing and chasing the rice birds with the musket and tin cans, and then harvesting with the sickles and cutting your hand with them. And it was hard work. And even ladies like my great-grandmother and my grandmother with bound feet would go out and help them. And they'd winnow the rice and everything until they had the rice mills really going. It was a lot. It was labor-intensive. And that's the very reason why we lost it. In the late 1920s, by then, the Chinese laborers were nearly all dead or retired. They were too old to work the field. Mm. And because of the exclusion law, we could not bring in any more Chinese who'd continue. Also, pestilence had, the pests and the weevils had gotten into the rice crops, and it was no longer profitable. So that whole thing died out about that area. By the 1920s, by 1930, there was nothing left. And the Japanese took over the few areas in Kauai, in the valleys, to grow the mochi rice. But there was no more rice after that.
That was Douglas Chong, author and Chinese historian, talking about the reign of rice here on Oahu. He's president of the Hawaii Chinese History Center, which is located on North King Street. It's open to the public, but has limited appointment hours from 10 to noon on Wednesdays.